From the pulpit of the Capital City Baptist Church, we present Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of Pastor Adam Thompson and the Capital City Baptist Church. I'd invite you to stay with us because at the end of the broadcast, we'll give you our contact information. And now with a message from the Word of God, here's Pastor Adam Thompson.
Genesis 37, we'll begin reading in verse 1. Jacob dwelt in the land wherein his father was a stranger, in the land of Canaan. These are the generations of Jacob. Joseph, being 17 years old, was feeding the flock with his brethren. The lad was with the sons of Bilhah and with the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought unto his father their evil report. Now Israel loved Joseph more than all his children, because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a coat of many colors. When his brethren saw that their father loved him more than all his brethren, they hated him and could not speak peaceably unto him. Joseph dreamed a dream, and he told it to his brethren. They hated him yet the more. He said unto them, "Hear, I pray you, this dream which I have dreamed. For behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, and lo, my sheaf arose and also stood upright, and behold, your sheaves stood round about, and made obeisance to my sheaf." And his brethren said to him, "Shalt thou indeed reign over us, or shalt thou indeed have dominion over us?" And they hated him yet the more for his dreams and for his words. As we look at the life of Joseph, we look at a story that's very familiar. We all know the end of the story, the rest of the story, and what God did and how God worked. So we're not dealing with something new, but we do know right here in chapter 37 where the story starts, there was a young man with a vision, with a dream. And I want to speak tonight as we go into the new year about a man that was trusted with a vision. I'm not talking tonight, when we talk about dreams, about goals or New Year's resolutions. I believe those are important. I believe they have their place. I believe everyone ought to have goals. They just give direction. They provide a little bit of motivation. You ought to write some down with your family, with your children. But that's not what we're talking about tonight. We're talking about something very different, a vision, something that comes from God, not the result of pizza, not the result of acid reflux, not the result of a hard bed and a bad night's sleep, but something that is stirred in the heart of a person to do the will and the work of God. I want to ask you tonight as we go into 2018, do you have a dream? Do you have a dream? I'm surprised at how few people, I'm talking about in the Christian realm, the Christian world, actually have a dream. Most of what goes on in Christianity, I would consider lackadaisical, without purpose, because it lacks a vision. I know I've heard both sides, and I've heard some men stand up and say, before this ever took place, there was a man back there with a dream. And then you talk to the man, and the man says, "Well, I didn't know what I was doing. I just wanted to do something for God. It's not like I was envisioning a building or envisioning what God was going to do 20 years down the road." And when God gave this dream to Joseph, we're talking about something that was very vague in his mind. He had no idea the details. He had no idea that he would be spending 90 plus years in Egypt. Part of that in prison, part of that as a slave in Potiphar's house. But this wasn't, you know, when we talk about dreams, I think, and I want to reiterate a little bit what I mentioned this morning. I think most people's ambitions and dreams in this generation revolve around money, finances, a better future. And let me preface this by saying, we all have to make money. And I hope you make a lot of money. But keeping your dreams and goals and visions spiritually oriented instead of financially oriented is difficult, because there's that constant pull. And I mentioned this morning, but many of you were working in the back, so I'll mention it again. As I contemplated this thought this week about Joseph in the dream that came directly from God, that would set a course for his life and provide him a GPS. We're talking a man that didn't have a Bible, but he had divine guidance. God put something deep in his heart, and here's what he decided to do. He didn't know about the details, and God didn't provide him with the details. And there were a lot of discouraging moments, but he was determined to do the will of God and let God unfold his will in his life. I want you to consider for a moment your children, your family, your ministry. As we go into this month of leadership, I'm fearful that often a ministry is more of a hobby than a true biblical ministry. As we have time, our excess time. Sometimes it's not even that. There's a class and there's a hurry and we'll put a few things together, but not a real focus, no vision, no goal. What's my plan for 2018? What's my dream long term for the ministry that God has given me, for the children that God has given me, for the marriage that God has given me? God gave him a vision, and we'll see here in a minute. He wasn't hated because he was the favored brother. He was hated for his dreams. They knew there was something divine in this. They knew that there was something that God had put deep in his heart. And here's the problem. Most of us don't even want to dream because we've seen that there's a cost involved with a dream. There's a difficulty that comes with a spiritual dream. A financial dream is much easier than a spiritual dream because spiritual dream comes with satanic opposition. So any young person that considers a spiritual dream is going to face a lot of critical voices along the way. So before that dream ever gets started, you got to deal with your flesh. You got to deal with a pull in a different direction. And then you got to deal with haters. And then sometimes you got to deal with your own family. Sometimes you got to deal with your own father that questioned your dream, your own mother. The question is not just the validity, but the intelligence. You really want to do that? You have so much potential in the secular world. You could use your money for other purposes. Why would you throw away your talent? And here's what we saw, and I'll repeat it once again. There was a day, and I got to experience that. I feel like I'm a man that's caught in between two very different generations. An older generation of Christianity where there were soldiers in the army of God. Soldiers that stood up, had backbone, would fight. Maybe they fought too often. Maybe they fought needlessly. Maybe they started battles that didn't need started. You don't have to wake up in the morning and kick the mailman to fight someone. Have a spiritual battle on your hands. But this is a generation that won't fight for anything. This is a generation that won't stand for anything. This is the generation that runs from a fight, cowers in fear at opposition. There was a previous generation, and their focus was, let's please God first and make money second. And that generation might have had fewer obstacles to overcome in the sense of they had less. So when they went to serve God, they sacrificed less. They gave less because there wasn't much change in their wallet. Money in their bank account. I think most of you can remember the day when you're digging around the back of your car and lifting up the car seats looking for a few extra quarters so you could top your car off at $5. You remember when groceries were week to week, not month to month. You remember when eating out was a special occasion. You remember when in your closet you had 4 pair of shoes, not 40 pair of shoes. You remember those days. You remember when your mattress was worth a couple hundred bucks, not a couple thousand. You remember those times. And you know what? You didn't think twice about it. You did not consider that a hardship. You didn't consider participating in missions and sacrifice. That was normal. But there was a generation of Christian parents that were begging God for him to use their children. And we're not talking about all just to go into full-time ministry, but we're just talking about in a church, in some way to win the lost and to be involved. That's what Christian parents wanted out of their children, just to serve God and do right and live for him. But this generation, even our best parents, now the number one focus is, if you don't get a secular degree, you have no future. Now we know that's not the truth because we have examples sitting right here in our midst. If you take Capital City Baptist Church, and those who have graduated in the past 20 years, you'll find out that those that went through our Bible college, on the average, make more than those that didn't. It's a strange statistic. But that's not a point at all, because we're not trying to raise up a generation of young people whose sole focus is on their earning income potential. We're trying to raise a generation of young men and young women in a society, we're not talking about just in a lost world, but even in a Christian realm that has abandoned the thought of full-time ministry. And now the very philosophy of our Christian colleges has changed from developing men of God and missionaries and pastors and evangelists. And now the philosophy is administrators, teachers, nurses, and all kinds of secondary degrees that have nothing to do with full-time ministry. What caused that shift? Pastor, are you telling me that everyone in here ought to be called to ministry? No, you know better than that. That's not what I'm trying to tell you. I'm just saying there's been some kind of shift in philosophy where now even in the Christian realm, the most dedicated of Christians, the philosophy is the secular first, the financial first, and the spiritual can be dragged along behind. So if there's a moment, if there's time, if there's a talent, if there's some leftovers, if there's an impulse, if there's a desire, if there's something in your week that can be a leftover for the cause of Christ or for the honor of God, then pursue the financial and all these other things concerning the kingdom of God will be added. That's not scripture. That's a twisted modern day philosophy found in Christianity. And Joseph's philosophy was, my life is about the honor and the glory of God. So when we're talking about a dream, this isn't what you normally hear preached, where there someone behind the pulpit is telling you set some goals. Joseph was not about setting goals. This was something that came straight from heaven, from God's heart to Joseph's heart. And he knew it. And his brethren knew it. Because if this was some late night crazy dream where he said, God's going to use me in a special way and I'm going to be something great, they would have laughed it off. You know why it perturbed them enough that they were hoping to get rid of him? Because they knew this came from God. Look what it says. Verse 5, Joseph dreamed a dream. He told it to his brethren, and they hated him yet the more. And he said, hear, I pray you this dream. And young people, let me just give you a few words of advice. If God gives you a dream, you need to be careful who you tell that dream to. You need to have a small circle. Now, real friends will encourage you in your dream. Real friends will understand your dream. But you would think right here in a church like this that everyone would be on board. But no, I'll promise you right now, in the modern day Christian movement, even among the independent Baptists, there are a lot of dream crushers. There are a lot of pessimists. Those that have dealt with frustrations in life want you to know that you're going to experience the same frustrations. The beatdowns that I've had to deal with and the opposition that I've had to face and the problems that I've encountered, you're going to have some of that too and probably worse. So you might as well not even dream. I had a dream too. Look how it's turned out for me. You ought to have some kind of dream, a spiritual dream. At minimum, your dream ought to be to live for God with all your heart and be used of God in some way to reach the world with the gospel of Christ. I'm glad I was raised in a generation of dreamers. Bill Smith was a dreamer. Chuck Bauman was a dreamer. Matt Johnson was a dreamer. James Hoffmeister was a dreamer. It's not accidental that they're in the ministry and they're on the mission field and that they're being used of God, not that they didn't have any opposition and not that they didn't have any problems in life and not that they didn't have any struggles and not that they haven't faced additional problems on their way to seeing their dream fulfilled. But they were dreamers, and you talk to this generation of young people. I don't care if it's 7 to 27. You say, what's your dream? Catch a touchdown pass during PE. get to the 58th level Krypton. Say, what's Krypton? I'm just making things up. I don't know. Never played a video game in my life. There is no spiritual fervor or zeal. I just want to find some way to make money. How about finding some way to please Jesus? How about doing something for the cause of Christ? I smiled in my heart and soul as I took these boys around Ecuador and I thought about my survey trip and I told them my survey trip wasn't anything like their survey trip. Nothing at all. So you guys don't even realize the benefits, the package, and everything that God has put in your favor. We bounced around Argentina. I wouldn't even tell you tonight all the circumstances we encountered on our survey trip. When I left Argentina, I thought, do I really want to come here? Is this really what I want to deal with? Oh, what we saw in Ecuador was encouraging, and the men and the missionaries and all of that stirred us up. And the food was great, and the fellowship was incredible. And the response was like, I've never seen before. That's not quite the way my trip went. Then you go to Argentina and your dream of starting a church, and Kim is watching her husband out knocking on doors 8-10 hours a day, week after week, month after month. 6 months pass and not a single convert. That's the reality of having a dream. Now, here's what happened. People come down to visit, and they see the building, and they see the people, and they see the workers. And now they go down and see a three-story building in Pachuca that's worth a fortune. And the pastor, what they don't see is the land when it was first purchased, and the lack of money in the bank, and the heart attacks we had when they said, you've got to make this $27,000 payment tomorrow. So what do you got? Prayer. They don't see the times that Kim's on the piano, I'm on the guitar, I'm the song leader, the music director, the youth director, the pastor, the host. I'm not good at any of that. There's a lot out there that's going to oppose your dream. And because most people face the opposition, they'll just tell you straight up, don't even bother with it. Go with the flow, avoid the disappointment. And too many people are doing just that. Too many of our young people are doing just that. Literally, even in a church like this, I would say the dreamers are a very, very small group. Someone with a spiritual dream, even in leadership, whatever your leadership position is, do you have a dream? Marriage, your children, your ministry, even if your finances, if that's your dream, do you have any spiritual dream? When God gives you money, is there a purpose behind it to help people to reach the world? Or is this all about a retirement, a stockpile, getting as much as you can, putting it in the can, sealing the can, sitting on the can? I dream about missions. Your pastor dreams about missions. Reaching the world is possible. It is more possible than it's ever been. There's just less and less desire. I don't care what other churches are doing. I don't care what our building situation is. We'll put people in the choir loft. We'll park a few blocks away. I want another building. I believe that God can give us a building. I'm not going to lose my mind over our building. But our first and foremost focus must be evangelizing the lost around the world. And yeah, I believe we can do it. I believe in Ecuador, with what God is putting together, we can literally influence an entire country for the gospel of the Lord Jesus Christ if we take advantage of this opportunity and this moment. We simply do what God has allowed us to do with the funds that He has given us. By faith, taking these steps, I told these boys repeatedly, and listen, our field is the world, and you come over to Ecuador with the philosophy that Cuenca is your field, or that Quito is your field. You've got the philosophy wrong. The world is our field. That is your location. And God had me in Mexico, and God had me in Argentina, and neither one of those countries were my field. The world was my field, and my location was Alta Gracia, and from there I was supposed to reach the field, which is the world. And right now my location is Austin, and guess what? My field hasn't changed. My dream, my vision is still training a missionary, starting churches, watching our young people. Pastor, are you going to help all these young men get called to the ministry? I would if I could. Yeah, I know, I would. I confess I'm guilty. But at this point, I've realized I can't. I'm not going to pressure your child. I'm not going to push your child, but I'm going to pray. That I can do. I'm going to pray that God continues to raise up young men out of this church. And for those that stay and make money, I'm going to pray that they direct that money towards those that are going. And I'm going to pray that Capital City does everything they can for as long as they can to reach as many as they can. Because you've got a pastor that's still a dreamer. And my dream is not to own some huge building in Austin, Texas, so we can beat our chest and talk about the facility, the $9 million facility that God has given us. I've seen some empty parking spots two blocks down. You ought to thank God for sickness, because the past couple weeks you've been able to sit with a few additional chairs. You're not shoulder to shoulder. You're not hunting for... Thomas actually made it almost to the front. I'm close to getting him right here on the second row. Sickness has helped me out. When's the last time you had a spiritual dream? When's the last time you walked your classroom with a spiritual dream? When's the last time you preached on the street with a spiritual dream? When's the last time you walked institute with a spiritual dream? When's the last time you looked at the music program with a spiritual dream? Because at some point, here's what Satan wants us to do, just to get irritated and start to go through the motions and look at the headaches of the ministry. Instead of trying to do something greater for the honor and the glory of God, we nestle in, get comfortable, and become afflicted with anyone that creates discomfort or pressure through talking about a dream. And here's what they did. They tried to shut this down. They couldn't shut it down because God was working behind the scenes. Here's what you got to understand. When you've got a spiritual dream and he's in it, he'll work it. He'll work it out. Look what it says in verse 18. Now there's so much in this chapter that we could talk about. Look at verse 9. Verse 9 says, and he dreamed yet another dream. Well, Pastor, I already had a dream. I don't know how well that worked out. Dream another. Behold, I've dreamed a dream more. You know what you need to do, young men? Dream some more. You know, some of you that are 45 and 50 years old, you haven't had a dream in 20 years. You know what you need to do? Go dream again. Not about a vacation and not about retirement. Something bigger than that. Something spiritual. Not dreaming about a week off. That's what most people dream about. If you young people want to know what adults dream about, new car, paying off the house, retirement, I think I nailed them all right there. That's it. Lubies. Those are the only dreams of the old. I'm talking about something bigger than lubies. Look what it says in verse 18. When they saw him. Here comes Joseph, the dreamer, when they saw him afar off, even before he came near unto them, they conspired against him. You know what? These were those that were closest to him were conspiring against him because he was a dreamer. And young people, I can't prepare you for this. I hate to admit it, but some of those that will conspire against you are going to be those that are closest to you of your own spiritual family. They'll poke at you and poke fun at you. And because they've had some pitfalls, because they've hit a brick wall, because they've had some problems, they'll try to convince you not to dream. I'm telling you, from someone that started churches, from someone that's lived in Argentina and Mexico, and someone that's been back pastoring in the States, and someone that started a church here in the States, dream. Don't let some soured-faced midlife crisis, spiritually frustrated, tell you about there's no reason to dream. Look at me. You know why I'm bald? I was a dreamer. You know why I'm gray? I was a dreamer. Verse 19, they said one to another, behold, this is derogatory, by the way. Here comes the dreamer. Let him laugh. Let him poke fun. But dream. It's amazing how we understand this in the secular world. We look at the Ford Empire and the Ford vehicles that we drive, and we all know the story of Ford and how he wanted to produce just a car and then 1,500 cars. And then we understand it in the secular world. And in the secular world, people dream. But in the spiritual world, Satan easily pulls us onto his side and recruits us for his team and gets us to wander around with a big bat-beating, dream-crushing philosophy that says, don't even attempt to dream. You don't have the talent. You don't have the ability. You can't preach. You have no people skills. You don't have the IQ. Look what it says, verse 20. Come now, therefore, and let us slay him and cast him into some pit, and we will say some evil beast hath devoured him. Look at the next phrase. We shall see what will become of his dreams. Now, if this was a Pentecost dream, it would go poof. But they knew this was come from God, and so they weren't doubting Joseph. They were actually doubting God. Let us see if we throw him into the pit and we sell him as a slave, I think we can end his dream. And there are people out there that want to squash your dream and convince you it's not going anywhere. The real question is, over time, what will become of your dream? There are going to be people that seek to deter you and discourage you. And you know what you're going to have to do? You're going to have to rise above your circumstances. But that's anyone. That's anywhere. That's all of life. And usually people come and they talk about their family circumstance. And if you knew what I had to deal with in my past, and if you don't bring your family to Joseph, because Joseph is 17 years old, his mom is dead, he's raised by two stepmothers. He's surrounded by half-brothers that hate him. If you read anything about Reuben, not a real great character. If you read anything about Judah, read the next chapter about Joseph's family. You want to talk about a dysfunctional family? Now that was dysfunctional. And that's what Joseph was raised in. You have four women that call themselves wives to your father in one house. That is dysfunctional. I don't think you've dealt with that. That's illegal here in the United States of America. You might have had a stepmother or two, but not four under the same roof. Just put this many people in the same house. And that's what Joseph had to deal with. But he's 17, and God gives him this dream. And here's what I like, young people with a dream. I like old people with a dream. I like anybody with a dream. I like getting around people that dream. I love Brother Ramos. Been to the ministry, 50 years old. I remember a few years ago when he invites down for the first time to preach his missions conference. That church was running about 1,800. And a couple years ago, we went back, drove through town. We were there on a Sunday morning, and they had added several hundred seats in the balcony. And I said, wow, that's quite the addition. Now you guys are running a couple thousand. He said, well, actually, our attendance has grown so much that now we have to have two services. So they added several hundred seats, and instead of packing it out once, now they pack it out twice. So in a matter of years, we went to a church that was running 1,800 to now a church that's running 4,000, because there's a man that still has a dream. Not a little dream. Not a dream to have a nice little car, a nice little house, and a nice little neighborhood, and nice little children, and a nice little church. That's a nice dream. That just probably didn't come from God. God wants to do something supernatural. So, John, if your dream is nothing more than a nice little house, nice little car, a nice little neighborhood, I promise you this, that's your dream, that's not his dream. That didn't come from God. The lost have that kind of dream. The unsaved, those that never walked into a church have those kind of, they have nice dreams about nice neighborhoods and nice children. Just doesn't always work out that nice. He's overcoming his circumstances. He's becoming tenacious. He's determined, young people, listen, he was determined to make it through the process. And when God gives you a vision, God gives you a dream, when God trusts you with a vision, there's a process that'll ensue, and it's not pleasant. God gives him a dream. He tells his brethren, okay, sheaves are bowing down. I think that means you guys bowing down to me. I think that's kind of what it means. That didn't go over very well. They didn't hug his neck, give him a high five, and say, oh, that's beautiful. We always wanted to bow down to you, Mr. Man of Many Colors, because you're the favored fellow with the coat. There's a process. Now, can you imagine? We know now that God's intention was to put him in the palace and to save Egypt from starvation. Can you imagine a 17-year-old in that place? Way over his head. But God was going to put him through a 13-year process. That's usually how long school lasts. How ironic is that? So God's going to put him through a 13-year school where he says, I just need to know the motives, because hold on for a second. If it's God's dream, he's going to have to test your motives, and he's going to have to trust you. What happens when he gives you a little bit of power? What happens if he gives you a little bit of position? What happens when he hands you this responsibility? How ugly are you going to be with that power and that authority and that position and those gifts? He's telling Joseph, you're going to have to go through a process, because I'm going to have to trust you when your brethren come back that you're going to forgive them. And I'm going to have to trust you to do the right thing. And I'm going to have to trust you to stay pure under temptation. And I'm going to have to trust you in a very wicked society. And I'm going to have to trust you in a palace. And I'm going to have to trust you with a lot of money and responsibility. But most young people, the dream, think 13 years of schooling is way too long. It's amazing how the Lord Jesus Christ didn't even get to the ministry until he was 30. But young people think this right here is magic. Welcome me, world! God's gift to you has come. Prepare ye. I'm not being embraced for my intelligence. Because you're 21, there's a process. And God's going to have to take you through that process. And part of it's going to be really ugly and very brutal. It's amazing how most kids can't even endure the process of Bible school. Too long, too hard, too strenuous, too much. I'm going to tell you something about a spiritual dream. If you can't make it through Bible school, you're never going to see the fulfillment of that dream. God has no fast forward button. Usually he slows things down. And usually what we see as useless was his plan. Joseph's thinking, why am I wasting years in prison? Why am I wasting years as a slave in Potiphar's house? Why am I wasting my time in these circumstances? They're not one day, not one week, not one month being wasted, because this is God's school. Here's what dreamers don't like. They want the dream, and then they want to give God the details. God says, no, I'm going to give you the dream, and then I'm going to provide you the details. Class in session. First subject, humility. Well, God, I've taken that for 3 semesters. Because you flunked. And you keep flunking. So learn to be humble, and we'll go on to the next class. God has a process to purge out your selfish agenda. He's not trying to make a dream. He's trying to make a person. But here's what you're going to find out. Joseph never let go. Most people just don't want to wait. They don't want to wait as God begins to work things out. Young people, you only have so much time. You only have so much strength. You only have so much life. I would dedicate it to a dream that God has put in your heart. And yes, things are difficult. Why is it that distress for many is the end of the dream? Some kind of disruption. Now let me tell you, young people, ladies, those of you that aren't married yet, if you don't like disruption, don't marry a dreamer. Marry someone with no dreams, no passion, no zeal for God, so you can just park in one place and rot for the next 40 years. Called a calm, tranquil life. But if you married a spiritual dreamer, get ready for a shakeup of the makeup, because they're going to be movement, and there's going to be ministry, and there are going to be surprises. So young ladies, if you don't want any of that, you just look at that fellow that God's called to preach, and you say, no thanks. Can't deal with a dream. Every dream is going to have to pass a few tests. Now go with me to Genesis 45 and we'll be done. Men, my question to you tonight is this. Can God trust you with a vision? Because leaders have a vision, a spiritual vision. Look what it says in Genesis 45:5. What was this vision about? Joseph now knows. Now therefore be not grieved, nor angry with yourselves that ye sold me hither, for God did send me before you to preserve life, your lives. God's plan in all this was a preservation of an entire nation, the salvation of Egypt. Now, young people, here's how you know if this is God's vision. It'll be about people. It'll be selfless. It'll be sacrificial. It'll be about souls. Now, if this is just you having some kind of inner desire, this will be about you having a bigger bank account, more money, a better job, promotion. So people walk up to you and go, wow, Kyle, you're working for them. That's not a clear vision from God. Because this is, if this is something that comes from God in your heart, you know what this may mean? Less instead of more. Less of you, less of money, less stability, less retirement, less recognition, if it comes from God. And Joseph, at the end of the day, he's out of prison, he's out of the pit, he's out of Potiphar's house, he's in the palace, you know what he's doing? Read chapter 47. He's saving a nation. He's saving his family. That's a heavenly vision. So let me ask you about your life. You've got one life, one chance, and you know this, it goes by in a heartbeat. Maybe it's in the Christian school. Here's what I can't understand. I truly have no greater respect in all of life than for those teachers that we have in our Christian school. Those are my heroes. The investment that is being made in these children all day long, directing them towards God, loving them, caring for them, instructing them in character, and they make regular investments in these children. If you don't have a dream, if you don't have some kind of spiritual dream, guess what? Your kids won't have a spiritual dream. If your only dreams are financial, their only dream is going to be financial. They're a reflection of you. Behold, the dreamer cometh. What shall become of his dream? We see what shall become of his dream. Here's a man that never stopped dreaming. In the pit, he was still dreaming. He was still surrounded by dreamers. He was still associating with dreamers. And there in the prison, he was associating with dreamers. And in the palace, he was associating with dreamers. And up to the very day of his death, look what it says in Psalms, or in Genesis 50. Genesis 50, verse 24. Joseph said unto his brethren, I die, and God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land, to the land which he sware to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And Joseph took an oath of the children of Israel, saying, God will surely visit you, and ye shall carry up my bones from hence. He said, don't build a pyramid. That's going to be really difficult to pull my bones out of there. Don't you build a pyramid. You put them in a box. And then when everything's rotted and decayed, you put it in backpack so it's easy to carry. Because I want my bones to go to the promised land, because I had a vision. And God said something to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob about us leaving Egypt. And when you go, I want to go along with you. God give us some men that are 100 years old and they're still dreaming. Because most young people, I'm going to tell you a secret about people's age. Most, by the time they're 35 or 40, they've stopped dreaming. They don't even dream of vacations at that point. You know what they dream of? A recliner and a bag of Cheetos. That's it. An entire tub of ice cream. A doctor visit that only costs copay $20. That's what they're dreaming of. A night without a leg pain. Old age without varicose veins. Excess calories without excess weight. I'm not making fun of old people tonight. I am one. I'm making fun of old people that don't dream. You're not too old to dream. Capital City, let me encourage you. Get a dream for your family. Get a vision from God. Not a New Year's determination that 6 weeks in is totally evaporated from your thoughts. Talking about God, I want you to use my kids in the work of God for the rest of their life. I want them to marry right. I want them to be pillars in this church or people in a foreign country that are doing the work of God. I don't want them to be on the sideline. I don't want them to be focused on money. I don't want them to be distracted by this world. If you have a ministry, what's your dream this year for your ministry? And then sit down with your kids and encourage their dream.
The Capital City Baptist Church is located at 1300 Red Street in beautiful Austin, Texas. We'd invite you to join us if you're in town. 10 a.m. Sunday mornings, 6 p.m. Sunday night, and 7:30 each and every Wednesday evening. Our phone number is 512-447-9454, but I'd like to point your attention specifically to our website, capitalcitybaptist.org. There you'll find information regarding service times, the staff, and all about Capital City Baptist Church. Additionally, you can find an archive of previously preached messages there for you to download, enjoy, and pass on to friends and family. Again, that website is capitalcitybaptist.org. That's capital with an O, citybaptist.org. Be sure and tell a friend and do your best to join us again for Pulpit Echoes, a ministry of the Capital City Baptist Church.